Okay, you guys, it's part deux. That's 6 years of French for you, or 4.5. I don't even remember.
Part five.
No, two. D-E-U-X.
No, I said two in German just then.
Oh, okay. Well, there's a reason I don't know that. Welcome back to the... crossed so many lines today.
I'm like, I apologize to Brittany and her kids.
Wait, I'm laughing so hard. I'm literally going to cry. Welcome back to Andy's Girls, Sweet Baby Dill. Dylan Hafer, pleasure to have you. We're just continuing to record. Listen, so we talked. We're not going back to New York. We've talked about
New York. We're not going back. I don't know when this episode is coming out. I'm scared.
It's coming out Saturday. They have a couple days. You know, we talked about Salt Lake City. Can we please unpack your thoughts on the Orange County finale?
Yeah. I'm like, this season of OC, it's funny because it was like such a highly anticipated season because of the things that we knew were coming. And I think that that can be a double-edged sword going into a season, to have these like big storylines that we are broadly aware of, that everybody can't wait to see how it's going to unfold, because sometimes it can flop hard. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that this season of OC has necessarily been exactly what we expected all the time with regard to some of those storylines, but like, it has been such a pleasure to watch. And like, I really don't think that they've had any kind of like weak spots. And in fact, there have been great aspects of the season, or really interesting aspects of the season, that aren't those storylines that we were kind of on the lookout for before the season started. So I mean, on the whole, just like, there was so much to look at this whole season, and it really came together really well. And I mean, hats off to the women in the cast and the producers and the editors. I mean, I just feel like they had a lot of balls to juggle this season, and I really feel like they did a great job with it.
I totally agree. How does Tamara save herself?
Yeah, this, I don't know. I mean, I have not watched back on OC in a while. I've watched like episodes here and there, so I don't know if I can like definitively say that this is maybe her like toughest position she's been in cast wise, but like, something just like it felt like there was like, it was like, you know, on like a, when you have like a power strip, like it'll have like a surge protector on it so you don't start a fire. It felt like this season, like Tamara just like didn't quite have that like self-regulation of how much current needed to be flowing at any given time. And it was kind of just like she was on 100 the whole time. And with some of these storylines and things that were happening, and particularly everything that happened with Shannon, the right energy to approach that with from Tamara was not 100% of current 100% of the time. Like, it was a little bit delicate. And I think that there would have been room this season for Tamara to be critical or asking questions or poking into certain things, but it just felt like she like never knew when to take a step back.
Yeah, and I don't know that her arguing the best response to some version of caregiver exhaustion is to hope the other person suffers. That's what we watched the whole season.
Yeah.
It's her trying to trigger Shannon into a meltdown and then laugh at it and then say, you deserve this because you're a bad person because you had a DUI and drove your car into a house. Like, Shannon did not make good decisions on her own, but in a totally, totally different way. And also strategically, I really think Tamara flopped. And she is really, or has been historically, pretty perceptive. I don't know if I'm just giving her too much credit from her break era when she was on a pause, but she was actually fired. Because I don't understand how she's able to shrug off and laugh at a lot, like a big amount of critique from her cast members, let alone from the audience.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I feel like Tamara is kind of has always been upheld as like one of, if not the best example of a housewife with like a producer mindset and somebody who can kind of like direct the story a little bit and make things happen and, you know, drive conversation. And I think what you said about her being perceptive in the past is spot on, because the thing about being a housewife with a producer mindset is that you actually have to pull that off. You have to have a pretty good understanding of like how much to do and then when to pull back and when how, you know, you have to kind of be reacting to things and experiencing it along with the rest of the cast, even if you've had a hand in it. And it just felt like this season, Tamara lost sight of that a little bit, and that she like, I mean, the whole situation with Shannon, it's just felt like callous the way that she has kind of handled it. And like, yeah, I mean, just like for somebody who she was so close with for so long, it's just felt kind of like so confusing, but also just like sad. Mm. That it's like, this was a person that, I mean, whether or not you are on good terms right now, like you've really been through so much with this person, both like in TV world and also just like, you know, in your life. And it's unfortunate. It's, I mean, I think just like, I don't know, obviously we'll see how the reunion goes and I don't really know what to expect from Tamara, but from like the energy she's been bringing as this season has been airing, I'm not expecting Tamara to like get down on her knees and ask for anyone's forgiveness at the reunion. So like, mm-hmm. I don't really know. I mean, watching Jen in the finale really stand strong in her conviction that Tamara is not a friend to her, as, you know, we saw her in London kind of, I feel like, have her eyes opened a little bit and really like feel like she was, you know, to use Shannon's favorite word, done. like that actually felt important. And like Jen has only been on this show for 2 seasons, but we know that she and Tamara have had a longer relationship than that. And Tamara and Ryan have known each other for longer than that. And so it felt like a major moment for Jen, who is maybe somebody who isn't that good at standing in her convictions, to really be like, no, like this is important for me to say, like, I don't trust you. Mm-hmm. And I think that will maybe be harder for Tamara to recover from than Tamara realizes.
Yeah, I don't know that Tamara is giving herself even an inch of leeway. I just kind of wonder for her, what's the path that you're creating moving forward? You're making it, for someone who used to be pretty perceptive, she's making it incredibly difficult for storyline to move forward, which isn't to say you can't hate someone in the cast. I mean, we thrive in those eras, but she's crossing so many lines that kind of don't make sense and are just solely so cruel, mm-hmm. that it's tough to watch Tamara, because I just hope for her that this isn't real. Because if this is who she is, what a terrible person she has become. I don't think it's her. I talked about this on an Orange County deep dive. Like, I think in Tamara's real life, she's probably pretty quiet. Like, but the Tamara that we're seeing on TV, it's like genuinely giving monster. Like, it's so mean, and it becomes to me slightly unwatchable. And I want her on the show. This is not the, oh, I don't like Tamara, so I don't want her anymore. I definitely do, but I'm just concerned for her as a spiritual producer. Like, how do you not see that this was a big swing? Yes, but an absolute miss.
Yeah, and I think it would be one thing if it felt like, wow, this season was so dead in the water and there was no juice, and Tamara felt like she had to do something to save it, and maybe she got a little desperate, it was a little out of hand, but she was trying to save the season. This season did not need that. This season did not ask for that. And like, frankly, I think if anything, like, this season might have been even better if Tamara was able to kind of like I don't think, when I think of like the best parts of this season and the most talked about parts of this season, like, nobody is loving whatever Tamara is giving us this season. It's like the things that people are really focusing on the most are like Shannon's whole personal journey that she's going through and everything that's going on with Alexis and John Jansen and the Katie and Heather stuff that's kind of, you know, bizarre and feels like it's gotten out of hand. And like, you know, Jen and Ryan, like there's a lot to look at. And Tamara being mean is not actually that interesting compared to a lot of the other stuff that's happening on the season. So it feels like she's doing herself a disservice for sure. But also it's like she's not even helping the season, you know, because of it.
Yeah, it's giving, she's been on the show way too long to still be an archetype. She's giving us black and white, mm-hmm. but a lot of other people in the cast are living in nuance. So you need to hurry the fuck up. And also her aligning with Heather to me is super weird because I think instead of Heather somehow lifting her into reality, they're just dragging each other further down. Like they're becoming their own weird, we're on an island, we're not really connected to anybody else. It's not working for me.
Yeah. And I think because, you know, Heather and Tamara may have some similarities in how they've handled things this season, but like Heather and Tamara are not the same. Right. And I think that when all the chips are down, like Heather is going to be able to move on from this season so much easier than Tamara is, because like at the end of the day, Heather is fancy pants in her big old mansion and things kind of slide off her. And she also just like doesn't take this that seriously in a way that maybe sometimes can be frustrating, but I think also probably helps her, you know, evolve with the franchise that it's like, also, she doesn't need the paycheck in the way that anybody else does or most of the other people do. So it's like, if Heather wants to come back, she'll come back. If she doesn't, she won't. But like, she will be fine, I think. Whereas like Tamara, I think, is so much more ingrained in this show. Like, it is so much more a part of her that it's like, she's going to have to deal with all of this mess that has been created. If she wants to rebuild any of these relationships, if she wants to, you know, make new friends or build new whatever, or like get anyone to trust her again, she's going to have to put in like some hard work. Whereas I think Heather might just have to like, you know, give somebody a fruit basket and be like, let's have champs. That was silly.
Yeah. And I think I think that there is going to be a little bit of a reset after this, because I literally look Shannon in the eyes during the most important hour of my life when she was in the Clawfuss, and she seemed truly, genuinely, absolutely done with Tamara, like absolutely done.
Yeah.
So I don't know how they navigate this in the future. I don't think anybody's jobs are in jeopardy, nor should they. But I do think something is going on with Tamara. And I don't know, maybe I'm taking the easy way out by being like, some aspect of this is a performance. I would just hope for her as a person that she's just not as big a piece of shit as she has clearly proven to us time and time again, especially the season, that she absolutely is. Because it's lazy and it's sloppy. She is also like not respecting anybody else. She's just, let me just make this person cry because that's what I think this job is and it's nothing else. It should be more than that, Tamara. Mm-hmm. It should be more.
Well, I think there are, pretty much everybody on the cast this season had to navigate some amount of where they fall in the Shannon and Alexis spectrum. We had people going in that had more of an existing relationship with Alexis than others, but Alexis was around for most of this season. At a certain point, like, battle lines were kind of drawn and there were a lot of people that fell somewhere in the middle. And I think like it's noteworthy that everybody else in the cast pretty much was able to navigate that situation with a lot more grace and like human understanding, and also like empathy that Shannon, whether or not you like her, is like going through something pretty objectively shitty. And like the fact that like toward the end of the season, when Shannon found that text from Alexis from like 4 years ago that was like, we will be suing you, I will be blah 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 blah, you know, clearly incriminating herself in this Jim Bellino lawsuit from years ago. The fact that like when presented with that information, like it was like absolutely nothing going on behind Tamara's eyes. And it's like, that was like a huge deal. Like, that was, you know, that lawsuit was like massive. And Tamara has talked about the impact of that lawsuit on her, both her finances and like her mental state and her life and all of that. And it's like, the fact that you're so into whatever, you know, brain fog this season of Alexis, that it's like, you can't even for a second be like, oh, damn, that is, this information is important. Like, it's strange. I don't know, like, what's going to happen.
Well, and also Shannon forgot about it for years, but Right. Let's not assume that Tamara did.
That's a good point. Yeah.
I think that Tamara remembered it, and that's probably why she was so easily able to negate it and somehow be like, this doesn't, like, her actions were saying like, this doesn't exist, this doesn't mean anything.
It's kind of reminiscent of when Danielle Staub came back to Jersey and Teresa and her were like BFFs.
Oh my god.
It's like, deal with the devil. Yikes.
I don't know which one is the bigger, I mean, obviously it's Tamara, but like, it's hard to, I don't know. She's really, I really think she's truly genuinely fucked up. And I have this complete outsider wackadoo idea that she will remember what it was like to be fired and won't make those same mistakes. But also that might be an impossible thing. Like, how do you un-Rinna when you've Rinna'd so hard? It's just, she's Rinna'd too close to the sun, you know?
Yeah, it's getting too late for a renaissance.
I'm curious,
like, you mentioned, I mean, this was specifically in regards to like the energy that you got from Shannon, RE, Tamara, but like, when you think about next season there being some kind of a shift, do you feel like, are you envisioning like a bigger cast change, or just like maybe Tamara takes a season off?
Oh, I don't want Tamara to go anywhere, and I don't want there to be a cast change at all. I think this cast is absolutely perfect. Mm. The only change I would make, because next season is 19, we're going back to 20. I'm just going to put this out there. I'm not saying it's a good idea. Put Vicky back. Oh, this is actually a terrible idea. Put Vicky back as a friend of for 19, and maybe give her one season full time at 20. Because 20th season. But the problem is, like, if you give it to her, she will not be able to talk about, I'm not going to make an insurrection joke because I think Teddy Joe really took one for the team there, finding out what would happen next. But like, she won't be able to let go if we give her full time again. But I also think, like, because of the Tamara of it all, Tamara does get upset by Vicky. Vicky knows which buttons to push. And I would like to see that. Mm. I want to see Tamara in a position where she's not the hunter as she has proven herself to be. Like, we need to get into some hunted energy. And Vicky is more than happy to do it when she's not in the middle of an email. So if someone can just hide her phone for a couple months, that would be great. Because I actually think it could be interesting. But if that doesn't happen, which is no problem to me, I'm not incredibly invested in it. I would just like to see it. Just keep the cast exactly as they are. So like, and film as soon as possible.
So Katie stays for you?
100% Katie stays.
Okay.
As AGs know, I am spiritually mid-20s plus. And you know who else is? My dear, close, personal best friend and also deity, Jennifer Lopez. J-Lo is actually the reason that Google launched Google Images, because of that infamous Versace dress. And she's still 20 years later, more sought after than ever before. With skin like hers, it's not a surprise. Love don't cost it a thing, but I don't want to continue to wait for tonight. Whoa. And thanks to JLo Beauty, we can glow right along with her. Get that JLo glow for yourself with JLo Beauty's Deluxe Kit, the one-and-done skincare solution clinically proven to tighten and lift for instant, long-lasting results. And much like my dear best friend, Jen, I absolutely agree. My personal favorite is JLo's Limitless Glow face mask. It is so soothing, easy to apply, cleansed my skin, had the mask on, and truly was having a spa night at home. So if you're tired of trying to crack your own skincare code, try JLo Beauty for 60 days. If you're not completely satisfied, just return the bottles, even if empty, and get your money back. Want that JLo glow? Head to jlobeauty.com/AndyScrolls and get a special gift of 4 free masks for listeners of Andy Scrolls. Head to jlobeauty.com/AndyScrolls for 4 free masks and free shipping today. That's jlobeauty.com/andyscrolls. Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? In the words of an unnamed former OG New York housewife, we support other women. There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now. In our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. Then there's the natural hormone changes our bodies go through. Perimenopause, menopause. And while it's a natural process, it doesn't mean we don't suffer through it. In the time before that time of the month, I don't feel like myself. I recognize a change in emotion after the fact, but during it, it's so difficult to understand what is different about the experience of being me that changes in a matter of days. The good news is we don't have to suffer through any of it anymore, because now we have Hormone Harmony, a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. Hormone Harmony is not just a hormone-supporting supplement. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. And the biggest benefit, feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews. And there are over 30,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code AndysGirls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code AndysGirls for 15% off today. I never knew you could treat depression symptoms from your phone. But with this prescription app called Rejoin, it's possible. It's for adults age 22 and up with major depressive disorder who want to add to their antidepressant medication. And get this, it's the first and only prescription app authorized by the FDA to treat depression symptoms. Rejoin does not replace your current medication. Be sure to use as directed by your healthcare provider. And if your depression symptoms worsen, seek help immediately. Get started today by talking to your healthcare provider or visiting meetrejoin.com. That's meet, rejoin.com.
Can we have a conversation?
All yours.
Okay. Because I watched it, recorded about it, watched it a little bit again. We're recording now, technically, allegedly. I hope I have been looking just to make sure, because that has happened before. The babysitting stuff.
Oh my God.
We don't feel great about that, right? Because somebody is lying. Someone is genuinely lying about whether the kid said it or didn't.
Okay, my love. Katie's lying about it.
No, wait. Okay, but wait. Save space. And I just sat straight up. I just want to say I've repositioned.
I'm like, somebody's lying and I know who it is.
No, wait. But okay, no. Okay, nobody's listening. Okay, it's just you and I talking. Uh-huh. Okay. Okay, so did Katie tell, her daughter's name is Kylie, right? I don't usually remember the
I
first season.
So.
Sure. Okay. So if did Katie tell Kylie to say this? Did Kylie, I don't understand. Was there a mission going into it? You're giving me face. Was it lost in translation and then we thought we were having a moment? Katie doesn't have a great instinct into moments that are moments. So I
moments in the world.
I knew it was happening. I 1000% believe, yeah, Emily and, yeah, Shane. 1000%. Yeah. But I just want to understand, like, was someone actively lying? And I don't think it. You just need to help me because it's giving conspiracy theory right
so
now.
So the one thing that we know for certain that Katie is lying about, because we saw the footage this week, is her saying that she might talk shit about Heather to her teenage daughter.
Oh my God.
But she would never talk shit about Heather to her younger son.
Bandon.
Which then we see the footage of them at the table of the son being like, Heather, is Heather being mean again? Mommy said she was mean.
Wait, thank you so much. Because when that, I blocked that out of my mind. When that happened, I thought, oh, this is so bad for Katie.
Like, that is the smoking gun.
Yeah, that is. That's a great point.
And I think that to me, obviously, we were not there with when, what's her name? Kylie was babysitting Keller and Luke, Emily's 8-year-old twins.
Angels.
But, so we'll never know, like, what technically happened, but the fact that we have on camera Katie's 8-year-old son, or however old he is, basically saying exactly what Emily's kids are purported to have said about Heather. I believe that, you know, that's the kind of conversation that's, and first of all, like, if I had kids, I'm sure I would talk shit around them. Like, I can't help myself. I don't know. But like, so I'm not,
my stepkids are at boarding
I'm not
school,
necessarily so trying to like drag Katie for how she speaks around her children. But I think that, first of all, if this was something that happened, if Emily's kids had said that, I still don't think that it's something that needs to be like spread out into the group, because I just feel like kids are kids. Like, I was surprised actually that this didn't turn into a bigger conversation of like, leave the kids out of it. Because I thought that if Emily had wanted to, she could have like kind of lit Katie's ass up over this, and she didn't really.
I thought it was incredibly shitty. Yeah. And I really felt for Emily and Shane, because it's like they think that this is a moment, but Emily and Shane are thinking it's a question of parenting. It's a question of what we're sharing around our kids. It's a question of this weird thing with Heather now, where Heather thinks our young children have an opinion of her, which is a whole other fucking problem. Right. Like, it's I think it's a shitty thing that Kylie said it on camera. I'm trying to understand, did her mom coach her to do that? Did she just make a bad call because it's her first time doing this? And maybe she doesn't have the best instincts. Neither does her mom at points, who I really like in the cast.
Yeah.
But like, they done fucked up. That was not, it was not okay to me. And now when you mentioned the Bandon thing, which I absolutely blocked out of my mind, that is not great. That is the smoking gun.
Well, and I also just feel like, if it had been like any other combination of people, if it was like Emily's kids said something about Tamra and Katie brought it up, like the fact that it has felt for a lot of this season like Katie is at least in some part kind of like looking for things to use against Heather, that's kind of how she came on to the show. I think she kind of, she put herself in that light by coming on so hot with the paparazzi photo thing. I think there was no way for it to not feel messy, because it was Katie saying something had been said about Heather. That if it was like Emily's kids talked about somebody else that Katie doesn't have an issue with, maybe it would have been funny. Maybe it would have been haha. Maybe it would have been, oh, like, a little annoying that she brought it up, but like, because it was Heather also, like, there's no way it wasn't going to be a bigger thing.
And how, I mean, how does the conversation come up with 8-year-olds? Oh, I know how our moms know each other, because they're filming. And I was looking at her production schedule, and I saw that one of the people she'd be filming with was Heather Dubrow. And I've got some thoughts I should share with you, babysitter, that I've never met before. Like, let's do that instead of video games. Like, it's not, that doesn't seem realistic. All of this seemed too perfect.
Yeah.
Which is ironic, because Katie's receipt about paparazzi is like the opposite of perfect. It's just a screenshot. So like, this thing is like, well, we're supposed to have a great receipt here because we can blame it on the kids, or the kids said it. It's both unrealistic and just undeniably unbelievable, and just in genuinely bad form. I really didn't like it.
Yeah.
Which isn't like someone should be fired. It's like someone made a bad decision and also thought, and it's, I mean, I don't think it's, in Katie's corner, you know, like, and I also think they thought it was funny, but did they? Did they really think it was funny?
I don't know.
It's so weird.
It's funny also because Heather dislikes Katie so much at this point, that both Emily and Gina, in specific instances this season, have gotten off the potential hook for something with Heather because it was coming from Katie. That in this kid situation, Heather immediately was like, oh no, Emily, I believe you. Like, I believe you. And back when they were in Sonoma or wherever they went for Heather's like wine fashion show gay thing, there was a charity. That was when we were hearing the rumor that Gina had told Katie that she was just using Heather for her real estate.
Oh my God. What was
network
that?
Or whatever. And that was another situation where, even though Heather and Gina have not been in the best place this whole season, Heather was like, well, that that sounds like bullshit. Gina, I believe you, not Katie. And so it's funny to me that like Katie has almost been trying so hard this season to sort of like sow seeds of doubt around Heather's relationships in the group. And Heather has just kind of been like, I'm going to go with fuck Katie.
Yeah, but Heather didn't initially say that. She was like, well, I'm never going to help her again. She immediately jumped when Tamara was talking to her about it. She immediately jumped to like, well, I'm going to punish Gina. She didn't stand up in Gina's corner and say Gina didn't say this. She was like, I believe it.
But when it turned out that it was like Katie's thing, that she was like, oh, never mind. Gina.
Oh, yeah. But she dragged Gina, as did everybody. Yeah. And Gina broke down because poor Gina. My angel, my love.
Poor Gina in more ways than one.
No, but this is the other thing. Like a total Gina defender.
No, me too. I mean, me too.
That whole thing about Watch What Happens is so shitty. And Gina has to get upset about Heather because she can't get upset at Watch What Happens for doing it. But the reality is...
Oh, the house thing?
Yeah, the reality is somebody said this. Someone reminded me of this. And I forget who it was. It might have been like Emily in an interview or something. But Gina owns her home. Mm-hmm. Shannon's home is rented. I forget. Have we seen Tamara's? I'm sure that Tamara owns hers. I don't know about Katie and Matt were renting theirs. Alexis, God only knows
Jen
what's happening
there. Jen
doesn't
have a home.
Jen is subletting. Jen is renting a room, but paying for it in kisses and love. Like, you know.
And trips to Vegas.
Trips to Vegas in the Bahamas every other week.
But not the bookie business.
We're just on private jets, but we don't know. It happens because... We're good people, and that's how private jets come. That's how karma works. It's just, it is kind of wild because like Gina's a quite literal homeowner, so she has something over other members of the cast just in that form of equity alone. Like, it is a little wild to me. She's no longer Casita Gina, and she has a job, is working, is providing for her family, owns a home, is figuring shit out with Matt. Like, she is miles ahead of some other members of the cast. And so it's like, let's just give her one sec. But I also get it. It's like a joke. And
I mean, when you say has a job too, I mean, I know this is fourth wall territory, but
yeah, they all have jobs.
Not only is she doing real estate and I think has like a skincare thing or something, but she's been on the show for six seasons. Like she's like.
But like two seasons.
But she's a housewife. Like she, it's not like, oh, she got brought on this show and she doesn't have a job. It's like, no, she's like a fixture.
She survived how many calls? I can't believe it.
And that was something when I talked to Emily about this earlier this season too, because they came on the same time. I'm like, you and Gina have like been through the ringer in terms of like ups and downs of this franchise, and you've kind of like emerged as really like key players, and kind of like the last few seasons, I feel like there hasn't even been like a question of whether Gina and Emily would come back. And like, if you're in that position where it's just like, oh, well, okay, so obviously it's going to be like those four, and then we got to figure out what we're doing with the rest. Like, they're like stable, long-term housewives. And I think, you know, they're certainly not the problems with this franchise.
No, keep them there as long as possible. I think that they're the MVPs of the season. I also believe, obviously, that Shannon Bedore deserves a Profile in Courage Award.
Yeah.
So if any remaining Kennedy... or whatever is available to just throw one of those bad boys in the mail. I don't know if Shannon opens mail, but someone will, one of her kids will at one point and can put that on her wall.
When Adeline's back from losing her voice in Europe.
And when they ordered the Aperol spritz and stuff, I was losing my shit. It was just very funny. But also I forgot, I need to write down the restaurant because-
In London?
London has a great foodie game.
I was in London last month and I ate a lot. It's amazing food.
Amazing food. Great foodie game. And so everywhere that they were eating, I'm not a Sunday, well, I'm a vegetarian, but I don't die for the idea of a Sunday roast kind of energy, but
where they were
else.
For the Sunday roast looked like it was like
random
in the woods somewhere. Like I don't.
Well, it had a porch with a blanket.
Right. Like where in London has a porch with a blanket?
There.
I don't know. They also, I know.
Maybe
noticed,
they appear on Sundays.
There was like some weird like chopping up of that London trip that happened with the edit, because it's like three of them went on an excursion to see Windsor Castle. And then it was like 2 minutes later, they were back at the hotel and they were talking about how they had gone to see the palace. And I'm like, okay, maybe they're just misspeaking. But like where they were staying, it's like you could like take a walk to go see Buckingham Palace. But Windsor Castle's like a day trip.
They don't know.
Whatever.
Heather kept talking about the queen in the present. Which chocolate does she enjoy? Babe, she's no longer with us. They're okay. Changing the currency as we speak.
But what I was going to bring up when we were talking about Gina and kind of like, you know, she's been going through it a little. I thought it was really interesting. Like toward the end of the season, it became very clear that like whatever issues that are happening with Travis's ex, like that is why the Travis moving out situation happened. Whereas at the beginning of the season, I don't know if there was like something they were waiting on to be able to talk about it or if they were not sure how they were going to handle it. But like the framing that we were given at the beginning of the season was we need more space and we can't afford a big enough house for all of us. So we're going to live separately. And also there's some weird stuff happening with Travis's ex that is stressful. Like, I feel like, I don't know if that was Gina's choice to frame it like that or if it was an editing thing that happened, but I feel like it kind of did Gina a disservice because at the beginning of the season, I remember thinking and I heard people talking about like, sort of like, what's going on with this situation? Like, are they breaking up? Are they not? And by the end of the season, I was like, it felt very clear to me. Like, obviously, we don't have all the details about Travis's ex, which sounds rough, but like that, like Gina, this is like paining Gina to do. And it's really conflicted whether this is kind of the right way to handle it. But like, I felt like I had so much more like grace for this situation at the end versus how it was framed at the beginning, which I just kind of like felt bad about.
Well, I mean, we can only go off of what we're given.
Of course, yeah.
And I think that it would have continued with the we need space, the kids, yada, yada. But her hand was forced because they referenced a rumor that allegedly was, per Gina's explanation, planted or whatever by his ex, which to me was a mind blow piece of information where I'm like, okay, now all of this makes sense.
Yes.
If you're dealing with someone who is having a problem, working, navigating her divorce as his ex may be, I could understand why they don't want to reference it. They don't want to talk about it in any way because they don't want to fan the flames. And a TV show, I mean, clipping that shit out, that could be a whole other path. And God only knows how much money they're spending on legal fees and everything else. Like they're trying to really.
Right. It's not just like, wow, we don't have good enough jobs to buy a house. It's like, no, there's like literally these like massive things figuring into our lives right now.
Yeah. And if you have somebody who's trying to leak to bloggers and potentially using court documents that you maybe pushed your partner down the stairs, which is quite literally domestic violence, Gina's reaction to that is, okay, well, let me remove the stairs. Like someone needs to be out of the house so that this accusation can't continue. And that has to be really complicated. I don't know. This is the sad, depressing part of this is like, okay, he's like inching closer to the divorce, but he's going to have to co-parent. They're going to, or not co-parent. We're seeing that with Jen and her ex, like quote unquote, LOL co-parent. You're still going to, this person will still be in your life somehow forever because you have because you chose to have kids together. So I don't know how, if we think that the divorce hopefully will quiet stuff or God forbid make it worse, you know, it's sad. I really feel for them. I really felt for poor sweet Gina in that moment.
And I think like Gina and Travis have always felt like sort of the like no drama like Gina had, you know, a tough situation with her marriage. And like, it seems like she and Matt have really made so much progress in their co-parenting and in their dynamic. And seeing Gina this season, like with Matt's fiance, new partner, I can't remember if they're married, engaged, whatever.
Engaged, but I think that they were having maybe like I don't know what kind of ceremony they were
right,
at,
okay. But like seeing how far that relationship has come is like, genuinely heartwarming, considering that like Gina could have like tried her best to cut him out of her life, and obviously the co-parenting is tough, but like that has actually become like a positive relationship to her.
Shows her strength
and the fact that like things can change and shift so much, and you don't know kind of where those things are going to go, and that, like, it doesn't seem like that is the path that Travis's situation is on.
Yeah, and a two-parter. Number one, she would have been no less strong to make other decisions.
Of course.
She would have had every right to. But it's just, we've seen a lot of growth from Gina. And number two, how fucking terrible for somebody to publish this for, or whatever, for somebody to say this when you know that Gina was the victim and survivor of extraordinary levels of violence because of her ex-husband. How fucking dare you, if this was came out of nowhere and somebody's inventing it because they're goddamn cuckoo puffs, like cuckoo puffs, cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, whatever, some kind of cereal. There, it's genuinely wild to say that to a woman who is a survivor of domestic violence, which she talked about on reality TV, on national TV, had to re-experience through the process of going through the legal system, deciding whether or not to give a victim statement, all of this. How fucking dare someone accuse her, hopefully unnecessarily, out of thin air, for fucking revenge or whatever else? That's disgusting and disturbing. This woman has actually experienced, wow, I'm getting like very, woman's like actually experienced domestic violence. So to accuse her of being an abuser is, and we don't live in Gina and Travis's house, and I don't know anything that's going on with his court situation. Honestly, the less I know, the better, going off of this energy. But it's just really, it's just gross. And honestly, it's gross of her cast members for referencing it, because as she said so well, because Gina's having a great fucking season, she's collateral damage. And it's, Tamra's so obnoxious and selfish and self-involved. And I know that Shannon opened Pandora's box here with the, like, you know, Jen, look at what Tamra maybe or maybe didn't do. Tamra's not even thinking about that at all. The lack of decency and respect to say, you know what, Gina's actually experienced this stuff. Maybe this is too far. The absolute boundary crossing and narcissism, spiritually or whatever, and self-absorption, and to not take into that into account at all is fucking wild.
Yeah. For sure.
Ryan?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. We didn't, I mean, that was the one thing where, like, we didn't get a ton of finale.
I wanted more denim.
Time about that. Like, it, you know, it was very much like as the credits were rolling, we got a little bit of the Ryan drama. Mm-hmm. I mean, he seems like a slimy guy the same way he seemed like a slimy guy last season. I want the best for sweet Jen Pedranti, but
I love her so much.
I don't know what that looks like for her, because I mean, talking about Brittany on Salt Lake City, I see shades of Jen Pedranti in her, but it's like, I don't know, for her she seems like somebody who really just doesn't want to be alone. And I mean, by all accounts, like, you know, hearing people talk about it, that it's like they seem to really love each other. And it's like, I don't know. It's just, it's like he doesn't seem great. I don't know.
I think that he really loves her. I think that she really loves him. I'm happy that she's happy. I'm really concerned about what it means to marry just for hopefully no reason, but just in terms of, you know, as Heather Gay wants us to keep in mind, it's a financial document, but also like a legal situation and a legal partnership. And I just I don't know. I hear her talking about him and saying there's so much that you don't see on TV. And I really want to believe her. And obviously he has taken on a lot of responsibility. And I just, Jen, babe, you can't say you didn't get some warning signs from ESPN.com or whomever else. Like, I really hope that it's great that he is providing financially. As she said, I would have been homeless with my kids, but also what are we saving? What are we saving as a nest egg? Like, we see the flashbacks of her talking about money in some scenes, and she's talking about having nothing, and then she's upset at members of at Tamara and Heather for talking about that $2,000 Dolce & Gabbana dress. I'm just thinking, like,
or like that she has glam on the trip. We know. I mean,
Katie said that that was donated. Okay. It was like a friend of something.
Okay.
Because I initially was like, yeah, that sucks.
She's got glam a lot of the other times too. It's a
an optics thing. She has to take responsibility for some of that.
And I think, you know, knowing kind of what we do know about housewives contracts and things that the network does and doesn't pay for and stuff like that, like, as a second season housewife on a long running franchise, like, she's not making $500,000 to be on this season. Like, it's you know, money in, money out. Like, I don't think she might be breaking even on this. Like, I don't know. Like, it's not like she has this lucrative thing, and like, other than teaching yoga classes for, you know, $30 a class or something, like, she doesn't have you know, Vita Tequila that allegedly is already a successful business before she was on the show. Like, she, I don't know. I want the best for her because she seems like a really, like, good-hearted person. Yeah.
And she's great at this.
I certainly hope she stays on the show.
Oh, God. She's not going anywhere. I hope she understands that marrying Ryan does not solve existing problems for her financially. As wonderful and generous as he has been financially in providing for her and her kids, I would hope she understands, in the ways that she's expecting us to believe, that she understands that her, like, previous marriage, that dynamic did not work. So let's not replicate it with a different model, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, before we wrap this 18-hour episode, triple episode, I was watching Potomac.
Uh-huh.
And I just thought to myself, you know who's giving me new Kenya energy? Stacey. And is this gentleman, you know, religious, et cetera, is he in fact our Walter 2.0? Like, I'm getting Kenya energy where I don't know how I feel about her, but I love to watch her on TV.
Yeah. And she's like coming in from out of town, and she's like, I have all my stuff together, but also I'm kind of a mess. Mm. And I have a lot of the way that Stacey is handling her interactions with this group, like the thing with Ashley, like mentioning that she has a man,
a friend, and then gesticulating.
And when they're at Lake Norman this past week, and Stacey, this is now the second time that it has been an issue, and she's saying that Ashley, by bringing it up to the group, she felt was minimizing the gravity of this relationship. Like, Ashley's face, like, what is going through Ashley's mind? It's like the Twilight Zone. It's like, what is happening? Like, I just, like, briefly mentioned that she has, like, there's somebody in her life. Like, what the fuck planet am I on that I have, like, you know, sullied the name of this woman's maybe relationship that is not being consummated in any way? Like, and that to me is so good for us, because it's like, when there are people that fundamentally just, like, can't match up their communication styles, it often leads to really wonderful reality TV. So
also, obviously, I, as I think many others, thought the bunk beds thing was going to lead to a night of terror.
I thought she was going to show up and, like, burn the house down, that she was expected to share a room. And she's like, top bunk, me.
She's like, all of my dreams, my childhood dreams have come true. And I'm thinking, like, what? was just so unexpected.
Nothing.
I delighted.
Nothing could have been more unpredictable than Stacey, Ms. QVC herself, HSN, QVC, showing up to that house and being thrilled, not only that she had to share a room, but that there were bunk beds.
I loved it. I also, and again, like, I really grew to appreciate Kenya, and I guess, quote unquote, liked her on TV at the beginning, but I didn't like her.
Yeah.
And Stacey, I seem to really like. Like, I think she was great casting 100%, but also that could go away so quickly. And it's not that I agree with her on things, but there's just something about her energy that I'm just like, this is good casting. She's so unique in this specific mm-hmm. cast, but also something is off.
You know what I just thought about is, do you remember season one of Potomac? You know how sometimes new Housewives shows, I don't know, you know, they were maybe shopped around as something else and became Housewives later or whatever. But like Housewives of Potomac season one had like an etiquette.
Yeah. Theme. I didn't like season one of Potomac.
And Stacey, to me, almost feels like she has that kind of like, almost like Charisse season one Karen energy, where she's coming in and like sort of explaining to us the etiquette of various situations and like calling out other people's faux pas and sort of like feeling like that like aloofness that I think can work really well and also sometimes doesn't work. But like, I think she is such an interesting, like her life seems interesting. I'm you know, like the fact that she, her ex is German. And so like her daughters speak German with her. Like yeah. That's like an interesting little, you know, flavor to add. But like, I think that she brings something really interesting to the table also as kind of like a new narrator in a way. And I don't know if she's a reliable narrator. I don't know if she's, you know, a main character kind of, you know, like a Bethany or like a...
She's definitely not. I'm telling you that.
No. She's not a Bethany. That's not... But like, I think we have had over the years, like there is this kind of tradition of having somebody in the cast who can kind of like relay what's happening or narrate or kind of commentary a little bit in like a confessional situation. And like, I don't know if that's going to be Stacey's role on the show, but I am really I am very amused by what she's giving us so far, both in her actual scenes and kind of in her commentary on the group.
I would place bets with money that I don't have that she does not become the narrator of the group, but I would also place bets that like that she's dynamic. Like she's
a color
she's
commentator.
Possibly. Like she's cooking. She's cooking with gas. Like there's something here that's fascinating. And also I think the way she shifts even not her personality, but her aura at points. I can see like the presenter in her. Yes. It makes sense. God, there's, and also
she's like polished to a fault. Yes. So yes. Then the second that there's, and that's the thing with her friend, when Ashley kind of like, you know, tipped the group off, like, I think she felt like there was a little crack in the facade of her. Like, she's like, oh, I wasn't ready to reveal this piece to the group yet, so she kind of like glitched a little bit when Ashley did it, and then feels like her privacy was violated, even though at the end of the day you're already filming scenes with this man. Who cares
if you think you're gonna be in control of your storyline and your narrative on Potomac? I don't know who lied to you, but I'm gonna say it started with yourself. Like genuinely.
Yeah.
And I'm here for the there's this weird energy, and I mean that as a positive, happening with the cast right now. Like,
yeah,
I can't figure out who's on top. Like, Mia seems to be fascinating, and everybody else seems to be fascinating, and Karen is flopping more than she isn't, although she still has those funny responses. But it's cuckoo, her response to being charged with a DUI, to be like, nobody can talk about it, and also I'm innocent unless something happens, which I'm gonna find to be a stunning development. I don't know that Karen, that her innocence center, to borrow from Emily on Orange County, I don't know that she's really gonna be their first client, you know, for Real Housewives of Potomac. I don't know that Karen's proof of just waiting to exhaust cast members into not mentioning what happened, I don't know how that's going to pay off for her. And I really do. I know this is like so stupid to say. I don't know if it's stride or whatever, but like I've lost some respect for her for how she's handled this. And I also think she does appear to be a joke, but not in the fun way that I celebrate Karen Huger, who I love, who's an incredible housewife. It's just such bad strategy and humanity right now. It's rough, rough, tough stuff.
I do so much though enjoy this vibe that we kind of have of like Karen and Giselle sort of jockeying for position with
love
the newer crop of ladies that have come into the fold, that it's like, you know, Stacy was maybe Karen's friend to begin with, but then this situation happened and Stacy, you know, notably chose to fully attend Giselle's event because she received that invitation first. Mm-hmm. And again, in the like etiquette sense of things, she's explaining to us that she felt it was proper to attend the event that she had already committed to. And like, then when after that fiasco with the late bus and all of that, when Giselle is sort of like meeting with some of the new women who have maybe shown Team Karen inclinations and letting them know that in fact it's not their fault, and she does feel bad for throwing them out of the party, but she had to because Karen disrespected her so. And so she's not mad at them, she's mad at Karen. And she's sort of like, the way that this cast is kind of like maneuvering right now, it's so interesting because we've seen in the past like older or more established housewives, I should say, like sort of not wanting to engage with the new cast members. I mean, Vicky Gunvalson famously, you know, bullied 1,000 new housewives in her time,
including Emily and Gina.
Yeah. And like Ramona was kind of in that sort of vibe sometimes.
Not kind of.
Yeah. But like,
and Bethany during her return.
But this season, I think we're seeing something with this cast and specifically with the returning cast members where like, I think everybody's eyes are open a little bit to like where this franchise is. And we see that with Giselle and Wendy doing a complete 180 in their relationship with each other, and both of them being like willing participants in whatever their relationship is this season, which like their relationship last season or lack thereof was like one of the most frustrating parts of the season because it was so acrimonious. And so like, in terms of really making inroads with the new women, in terms of reframing some of their existing relationships, Mia's sharing so much about, you know, her whole situation. Like, it feels like this is a sort of best case scenario for me of like, I think everyone understood the notes from last season. And it really feels like they've pivoted in a way that like, they didn't need to flush out the whole cast and start brand new. I think that would have been a mistake, but they did make some key changes. And like, it feels fresh to me in a way that like New York right now, they have a whole new cast as of last season, but it doesn't feel that fresh.
Totally. 100%. And what Dr. Wendy and Giselle are making happen with their burgeoning friendship, I can't believe I'm saying I'm here for it, but I am. Like, they did take the note. They realized they needed each other more than together, than trying to tear each other apart separately, where one or both of them could have lost their jobs. Like, they figured it the fuck out, and maybe it's the mutual respect maybe started from there. But I'm fucking here for it. And I'm so glad Robin's not on the show anymore. Apologies, not really. I'm just like, thank God, like no more Juan Dixon. Like, we can move apart from this woman agreeing to be publicly humiliated every season. Like, let's shift. I actually think that helped a lot. I really do. And obviously Candace moving on, making the choice to move on, I think was a solid one and very helpful for the cast.
Yeah. I really, in term, one more thing with Giselle and Wendy, when they were like, I think it was when they were in the car from the airport and Giselle was basically explaining how mad she is at Karen over this event thing and how that's like her focus now is like, you know, taking Karen to task. Mm-hmm. And Wendy's like, but not tomorrow because it's my birthday. And Giselle's like, right, 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 not tomorrow. And I'm like, that's a big moment. Like, a season ago, Giselle would have been like, fuck your birthday, I have some grievances. Giselle might not have even been there. And so we've made a lot of progress. And also, I mean, speaking of Robin, which nobody has done on this season, that in and of itself, Robin is an OG housewife who was on the show for 8 seasons. They did not make one single mention of her not being there. I noticed that when I watched the premiere, I watched it a couple times and I was like, specifically, like, they have not acknowledged that there is anything different. And I think that that is in and of itself very noteworthy.
I'm going to say something terrible. Robin is what happens if Gina didn't grow up. Like, if there was no growth, you get Robin, who did grow in her life and yeah. like is a small business owner, you know, God love a facial, like great, good. And then she just opened her doors. Love that. But also, oh man.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
She does not care. And
good for her.
Good for her. And she's not caring
off camera,
not on TV this yeah. season. And I mean, yeah, it's working so far. And like I said, maybe in the last episode, depending how this gets cut, like Potomac so far this season does feel lower stakes. And I think part of that is because Karen is so leaning out of dealing with her DUI stuff on camera. But I'm cautiously optimistic because right now it does feel fresh, but also like fresh can turn boring. And so like, I hope that these women have kind of like something up their sleeves. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like right now, I'm down to just like enjoy the ride a little bit.
I love that. Cautiously optimistic. And I think it helps that they're supported by Salt Lake City killing it, Orange County killing it, and New York being bad. Like that actually helps to be somewhere in the middle. And we'll see yeah. what happens with the rest of their season when they have different support systems. When it's like Beverly Hills will need the support of Potomac. Like who knows what's going to happen with BH? Like this can shift in so many interesting ways.
Yeah, it is interesting, like looking kind of at the calendar that we have coming up, that it's like, okay, so OC is going to be done in a few weeks because their reunion's coming on. But then it's like we have Beverly Hills, Southern Charm is coming back beginning of December. And then did you see the trailer for this Sold on SLC show?
I haven't watched it yet.
So I don't know anything about this show. Like I've seen the trailer, obviously, like I've read the press release. I haven't heard any opinions. I haven't seen anything, but like it feels like Bravo finally realized that Million Dollar Listing like isn't cutting it compared to like Selling Sunset and the Netflix, like the way that people want to watch reality real estate shows
a little heavier on personal
life. It feels like Bravo is like catching up to that and remains to be seen if it will be good, but I feel like the ceiling for that show is very high for me. And like, I could see it being a little bit of like a Valley, Secret Lives of Mormon Wives kind of like pleasant surprise kind of thing.
I'm here for it. I commented in full approval without actually watching the trailer on the post that Bravo had because I just got the energy in the first like, I don't know what, that I was like, I'm into this.
Well, I think it's like,
I think it's Salt Lake City. I'm Salt Lake City coded now.
A like younger, fresher show, but that has like an actual premise. It's not just like six friends. And in the trailer, the woman who owns the brokerage is named Jen. And she says in Utah, people follow the 10 commandments. But at my brokerage, it's about the Jen commandments. And
oh, no, when I heard it back,
when I heard that, I got a feeling that I'm like a new icon has been birthed.
Well, listen, speaking of the 10 commandments, there is an 11th, which is that technically this episode at some point must end. So, Dylan, what a pleasure. What a joy. Thank you for participating in a two-parter. Thank you for giving me your entire day.
I'm giving you Brittany Hart.
I gave you a Brittany Hart at one point during recording. I don't even think I mentioned that not once in the Salt Lake City deep dive because I spent a lot of time with Brittany. I can't stop talking about Brittany, but I must stop right now at this point. Sweet baby Dill, can you tell the EGs any recent guests you've had on Mention It All? We've done a bunch of episodes together. Always the best part of my day.
I know.
When we record, what you got cooking over at Bravo by Betches, and also your personal handle, Mention It All.
What have we got cooking? God, I feel like I am like in a vacuum right now of like not being able to remember anything.
But they're all, you have so many Bravo Labs on.
So many Bravo Labs. Also, so a couple weeks ago, lots of Bravo Labs. So if you're into that.
If you're into that. I'm not into
it. A couple weeks ago, I had on Heather McMahon, who is a stand-up comedian who has a new special on Hulu, which was, it's, the special's good, but she's a big Housewives fan. Yes. And so it was fun. We had her in, and it was, that was a fun time. She's hilarious. So
she was supposed to be on AG forever ago, and I fucked up. We've talked about this. So I need to, with her team was incredible and wonderful. And I think, I God only knows what I was scheduling at that point in my brain, but, she's on my Kim Zolciak, Believe, Receive, Ask, Believe, Receive, whatever. Shout out to Kim. Shout out to used Chanel that she's selling for $40,000. I think Heather is the best, and I Brielle! Love her. I love her. I love Heather's takes on Bravo. I think Heather McCann is great.
She's so very cool. She's obviously funny, but like also a little bit outside of like this world, which I love. Sometimes fun to get those little takes. But
love.
Yeah.
That reminds me of something I need to talk to you about offline. Tell the.
But yeah, listen. I'll tell people. Listen to Mention It All wherever you get Andy's Girls, three times a week, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, for the most part. And you can follow me on Instagram at Bravo. You can follow me at Dylan Hafer and follow at Bravo Pie Betches. But that's also me.
Which is, I was about to say, that's literally also you. Speaking of the me's, join the Andy's Girls Patreon. There are two all new episodes up now. A Reading Rainbow episode unpacking Dina Manzo's daughter's Lexi. Let's pretend that was grammatically correct. Blog post talking about Tommy Manzo. So I get into the nitty gritty on the AG page on that episode, and also a Holy Trinity style live reaction episode where I watch for the first time the trailers for Beverly Hills, Southern Charm, and Married to Med. So it's an episode you want to listen to after you, in fact, have watched the trailers. But I give my reactions, and there were a couple moments that like quite literally took my breath. So you can sign up for the AG Patreon and listen to those episodes now. They're exclusive to the OG of the AG and People's Couch tiers, and they're available at patreon.com/AndysGirls. Follow me on Instagram at Dame Galley. Send me your satchels of gold, your thoughts and feels, questions and concerns, named in honor of Her Holiness Kelly Clorne Ben-Simone, about all things Housewives, what we've talked about on this episode, and it might be featured in an upcoming Patreon Satchel Spectacular episode. And as mentioned at the beginning of the episode, if hopefully, you know, check your voter registration, vote early, don't vote often, but right now, if you're listening to this and you are based in the States or not, because I've honestly gotten DMs from people all over the place. There is a lot of fear and anger and frustration and just concern about what is going to happen on election day. And I'm just genuinely hoping for the best, but also hoping that you please use your voice. And I know that the demographics of AG, like the Bravo audience, is the spectrum is broad. And so I just hope, regardless of who you're voting for, that you are exercising your right, because people have died for that. And I think the single best thing that we can do as Americans is, you know, obviously listen to this specific podcast. But also in addition to that is voting. I couldn't be more passionate. And also as a woman, absolutely, I couldn't be more terrified. So please vote. And you can visit When We All Vote or any number of bajillions of websites to create a voting plan, and talking to your friends and fam, and making sure to check your registration. That link is in the show notes for this episode. On that note, Sweet Baby Dill, do you remember when we did a Christmas song? Was it Santa Baby? It was Andy Baby, and Andy responded, and I didn't even know for like weeks because I'm so bad at social media. Remember we did an Andy Baby? I'm going to post that. I need to reshare that.
Okay.
Remember, shut up. We did a Santa Baby. We sang.
I remember.
And it was Andy Baby talking about friends of, I think, that we wanted get full time.
We did a different song. We did that.
We've done two.
We did That's What Friends Are For.
Oh. I was hitting my head against the closet.
This is like a deep pandemic fever dream of when we did like a song over Zoom.
We should ask Brittany to join us.
In good time. In Kim G times.
It's on my social. I don't even know. You'll tell me after how to find that easily, and I'll repost it or something. Cause that was a delightful time. I remember I didn't have like the tracking, or it was like a different key or something. It was a whole mess.
We're doing that again.
Okay. Anyway, on that note, Merry Christmas, and that's timely. And we will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.